Access number 29065, Mr. Michael White, Reel 4. Now, after you'd finished your 2 weeks, you get your next posting. Now, could you, which is not far away, but could you that's the 31st Training Regiment, Royal Artillery, according to your memoir.
Yeah.
Tell us where this is. Where are you going?
After Oswestry, I cannot quite remember how we got from Oswestry to Kinmel Park Camp in Reel, on the outskirts of Reel, I should say. I can't remember whether we went by train. I should imagine we must have gone by train or truck. I can't remember. Anyway, I was then transferred to the 31st Training Regiment, Royal Artillery, which is the training regiment for driving. There were two training regiments in the Kinmel Park camp. There was the 38th Regiment, which was also for the signals. So there were the signalers and the drivers in the same camp. Although we never really linked up, they were divided as such.
Now, when you got there, what were the conditions like at 31st? Because it seems to have been a more pleasant atmosphere for you, anyway.
What I actually remember of the camp itself, I think it was still wooden huts, you know, the spiders, if I remember rightly, but things were much more relaxed as such.
How did that show itself? In what way was it more relaxed?
Well, we still did the kit layouts. We still did the PT training. We still do the marching up and down on the square with the either with rifles or without rifles and things like that. But also the next thing we came in where the signalers then took up the signalling, we went in for driving.
Take me through your driving track. How do they set about giving you driving training?
Well, on Kinmel Park Camp, they had this large square where they used to do all the square bashing as such. But on each corner, they used to have a big concrete bollard. And so we then had to split up in twos and threes. And we went to had to go to a report to a different driving instructor who was mostly a national serviceman, really, a lance corporal or a lance bombardier, as he would be in the Royal Artillery. And, of course, they had these assortments of vehicles. They had these Bedford 3-tonners, they had these Bedford 1500 weights, they had these Ford 3-tonners and I think things like that. So all that. And then, of course, there was where there was a little bit of a scramble. And, of course, most of the vehicles for the 1500 weight, the small 1500 weights, they soon disappeared. And I finished up sitting in a cab of a big Bedford QL 3-tonner. Now, this was the first time I'd ever been in a vehicle like that, and it seems so high up from the ground sort of thing. And with a QL sort of thing, Bedford QL, the actual gear stick is more to the rear, so you cannot see it, where in a Bedford 1500 weight, the gear stick is more or less where you could actually see it more or less by your left knee.
So this is sort of behind you?
Yeah, it's just here.
They can't see?
Yeah, just here. And it's the gear stick is more or less to the rear. It's by more or less your left hip. And it's four gears and a reverse.
What was it? A crash gear? You know the old what sort of gear? I mean,
the gear when you actually change from first to second, it was you had to double the clutch, as they called it. So it was kind of like the clutch in and then into neutral and then out and then the clutch in into gear and things like that.
Now, that's not easy. I mean, well, to a modern driver, that seems very difficult. Yeah. Now, take me through it. How was it? You got into this huge lorry. How did they start you on the process of training?
Well, you had the driving instructor sitting in the passenger seat as such, and he more or less. I don't think they had a clutch there, and he just showed you how to kind of put the gear into first, then second, and then across into third, and then to fourth. And then I think the fifth, I can't remember whether you lifted it. And then, so you actually started off in first, and then kind of you started going round the square, round the bollards, and then, of course, as you were going in, you was actually crunching it because you was only changing very slowly because you were doing double-dig clutch and things like that. And then as you went round the square a few times, and that, because you'd have these sessions actually in the camp where you'd have your kit layouts, you'd have beyond the square, you'd have your PT training, you'd then have your driving training, and then you'd go through the procedure again, so you'd come back to driving training again. And then as you became more proficient, you then went out what they called Route 1, which was outside the camp, and it was on the local roads. I think they're the local ordinary single roads, and until you came more proficient, and then they went what they call Route 2, which was on the dual carriageway. You used to go up to Chester and things like that. And so as you went through the, we had 6 weeks training as such in Kinmel Park Tramp as driving, but it was during that period when I think it was the, I'm not sure whether the Korean War started up then, but then they decided that we were going to the Far East, either Singapore or Hong Kong. And so that what they did then, they then gave you another 8 weeks training as such. But with this training, to make sure, because there was all these problems in the jungles in Malaya, and so you had to get used to taking your weapon with you. So everywhere you went with your rifle, whether you went to the toilet, whether you went to the cookhouse, or wherever you went, PT training or anything, you had to take that rifle with you, even when you went to bed, sort of thing, it was put there. So you got used to it, it was automatic thing, so when you moved out, you picked up your rifle.
Now, so how did you do generally arrive? I mean, did it take you long to qualify? I mean, were you a reasonably decent first-time driver, or were you, did you
no,
have trouble?
There were one or two lads who actually, the fathers had actually got a vehicle as such. My very good friend, his father had a wholesale greengrocery business sort of thing, so he could actually drive. And there was another fellow who had an old motorbike. But I was completely fresh to driving as such. But as we got, we kind of progressed as such, and eventually we took this driving test. I think it was at Conway or Colwyn Bay.
Now, what do you remember of that? What was the test? How strict was it?
Well, the actual test was you just drove, you just changed gear and things like that, and then you did a reverse and things like that, and if the driving instructor thought you was proficient or not, you got a pass.
And you passed.
Yeah.
Now, what about the other part of the normally driver training? There's also maintenance, routine,
Yeah.
I don't know how far you get towards being a fitter. I don't think you do, but no. Maintenance.
No, what there was also as well, I've completely forgotten about the maintenance, that one of the sessions through the day, or perhaps even two sessions a day, you'd go into, say, a kind of a room as such, where they all sat two behind a table, and then they'd have all these, drawings on the blackboard or on the wall, or you had these things in front of you showing you how to your sparking plugs, and also the army had this what I call this marvelous 14-day task system. So each day you'd for example on the Monday you'd change the oil, you'd test the tires, and you do the different things. On a Tuesday you'd move on to something else, and then on the Wednesday and the Thursday, and so over the period of 14 days you'd have kind of like a general kind of checkup of the actual vehicle. But towards the end, actually, as I remember, the 14-week kind of driving training, they decided to take us on a three-week trip out. So from Rhyl in North Wales, we then moved back to Oswestry in England.
Hang on, there's a couple of things before that, I think. One of the other things you've got is you seem to have gone on various route marches and things, which you haven't done before. This is before the, and it's 3 day, not 3 week, I think, or it is in your memory.
No, we...
So tell us about these route marches. 20 mile, that's a long way.
Well, as I was saying about kind of like the PT train, it was quite hard. I mean, I'd played football and cricket continuously as a lad, and I consider myself quite fit, so I got no problems there. But my problem was on the wall bars, and what they use, these PTIs, they used to wear these black and red striped jersey, and so they used to do all these press ups and running here, running there. You never time to stop really. So they had you hanging on these wall bars, and of course, although my legs were very fit and things like that, my arms were not very strong and pulling up and things like that. But I did quite well, and of course, the same thing applied in this camp as well. That kind of when you would actually finish, everyone outside sort of thing get changed and back on the square. Some like the last one out would be on a fizzer, and so things went on. Now, when we come to a route march, because we was in North Wales, and they decided to go on this route march, and I think we went for about 20 miles, as I remember. We went in batches of about 7 or 8 people, one side of the road and 7 or 8 the other side. And then as we went along, and of course, understandable, certain people were dropping out. And of course, I was quite fit sort of thing, and I had no problems of doing the 20 miles. And when we reached some moorland or wherever it was, I can't remember, somewhere in North Wales, we, because there's no tents or nothing like that, we just had our, what we called our poncho, which is kind of like a plastic sheet with studs either side. And I think if two of you put together, you could make some form of a shelter. And so we actually slept under that. And then I remembered it poured a rain, and of course, because under that small shelter, you couldn't get your rifles under there. And of course, the rifle was all rusty when we came out in the morning. But I do remember kind of they did come, and one of the cooks came along in a 3-ton truck, if I remember rightly, and they got all these big pots of stewy stuff and things like that. And of course, we used to eat out of mess tins in those days.
Now, anything else about training that was new, assault courses, anything like that? While you were there,
because we were driving training, we were not infantry training. We never had assault course, but we had the firing ranges with the Bren and the rifles and the 2-2s.
So your basic training continued through the camp. Now, what about this 3-day triangular journey? That seems to be what you were talking about. You mean 3 days?
Yeah, three days. What actually happened? I suppose it was getting you used to actually driving long distances rather than just kind of little hops. So you'd set off about 3 in a truck, and the chief instructor, I think he was on a motorbike or something like that, or a jeep, and so you'd drive for, I think every hour you had to change drivers. I think that was the theory, I suppose through tiredness or in those days. So we then moved from North Wales right back into England, into Shropshire, and then at night time we actually stayed in the barracks in Shropshire. And then the next morning, we then set off again to a barracks called Tom Fanner, which is in Mid Wales, which is near Towyn or Aberystwyth. So we then set across there, and in that barracks there was the Eviacac with the big Eviacac guns and things like that. So we then had a night there sort of thing, and of course it was all hills all around there, what I remember. And then we then moved up the coast of North Wales, up through Colwyn Bay, Conway, and back into Riddle.
Now, was there any convoy routine or discipline that you were learning? Because you don't just go out and drive.
No, we went in batches of these trucks, and you had to keep a certain distance behind. And then kind of like the chief instructor behind, he was on his motorbike and be zipping up and down and things like that. And like I say, every hour, I suppose, they changed drivers, and then there'd perhaps be a pause. And then we tried towing another vehicle, and this is when the problem started, when towing, and of course the hill starts, and I think one of the trucks, or more than one truck, bumped each other and things like that, and of course there was a bit of waving of arms and excitement and things like that, but basically it went off well, it did. And in fact, in all fairness, apart from the once we got away from Oswestry, the real messing about, I think basically, maybe I've enjoyed it really at Riddle.
Now, was there a passing out parade there? Do you remember that one?
Yes, there was a big passing out parade at Riddle, and on the main square they had 2 25-pounder guns, and then they had this big saluting base where the whoever, I can't remember who, would actually take the salute, and then we had this big parade, and I think there was a band there as such. I don't think we followed a band, so I think the band was stationary, and then we actually marched past the officer, whatever he was, whether it was a general or whatever, he'd take the salute, and then we'd actually finish there, and that would be the end of it. So we knew we was then going to the Far East. When we actually
left.
Now,
what did you think about it? You didn't know you were going to Korea, did you?
Oh, no.
Where did you think you were going?
I was either going to Singapore or Hong Kong.
Now, how did you feel about that? Was that something you thought, hooray, or what did you think?
I thought it was marvellous, because as a school child, as I say, most of the school children had quite a deprived period as such. Whereas the children nowadays, we go to Spain sort of thing, and you see people taking young babies about 4 months old going on, and young children, things like that. But of my era, you could not, being in the centre of England, you could not go to the sea as such, because I think most of the places, they'd all be mined or barbed wire, and there'd be all soldiers training all around there, you know, because I suppose there was still the fear of the German coming in and things like that. So really, we never really, I never saw the sea until I was 13 years of age as such, when the war had finished. So the theory of going to the Far East, where some were horrified, I was overjoyed, because I was going to Hong Kong, and I was going on a boat. I didn't know where I was going at that time. And so I was quite excited.
You then seem to have gone to Royal Artillery Base Depot at Woolwich.
Yes, we then went, because it was a long distance from North Wales to London, so we went on a train as such, and we went right the way, and I think it was more or less practically a troop train. And so we then arrived at Woolwich.
Now, this would be December, would it?
This would be, so I went from October, I went from August, the first 2 weeks would be at Oswestry, and the rest of the period was at Rhyl. Now, another thing I perhaps forgot to mention, that with the army, they're so sticklers for certain things. And, of course, when we was on training in Rhyl, you'd be what you call shirt sleeve order, because it was still semi-end of the summer period, and they're moving into the autumn and things like that. And, of course, being in North Wales, so we'd been in short sleeve order with the sleeves rolled up. And then, of course, as it starts getting into autumn and things like that, it does start getting chilly. But they're sticklers. Even if it's cold, you'd still be in short sleeve order until kind of an order came from somewhere, you will revert to battle dress. And so that was the period there. So we then moved into, we moved down to Woolwich by train, and that would be, I suppose, it'd be November, would it be?
Well, it looks like December, to be honest. Well, if you were 14 that, weeks at
Dillon. Yeah, well, it would be that period anyway. So we then moved into the Woolwich Barracks. I mean, we've got no idea where we were going. We've got no idea what the barracks was there. But, I mean, it was only later we understood it was like a transit camp. And so that was the place we was going there to be re-kitted with tropical...
Now, tell me about the tropical kit. What was the tropical kit you were issued?
The tropical kit you're issued with, starting at the top, would be a bush hat. You'd have your normal boots. You'd then have... you'd have shorts, but when you wore shorts, you'd then have what they call hose tocks. You'd have your normal army sock, which would come up to there, and then you'd have this hose top, which would come down there, and then you'd have putties go round. This is the old putties of similar like World War One, which were, in lots of ways, they were a lot better than the gaiters. So the putties went round, so you had putties there, then for the daytime wear for Hong Kong and that and Singapore, it would be shorts, green shorts. It was called jungle green in those days, jungle. And then for your best, and then you'd have a jungle green jacket, and then you'd wear your normal webbing belt round your waist. And then kind of for your so-called Sunday best wear, we'd have what were called olive green. It was a better jacket, things like that. They're still the same trousers. And then it was just a normal headdress. We had I can't think what else they'd be.
Now, you would also get your inoculations or vaccinations. Oh,
yeah.
What was the process like, and what effect did it have on you and some of the other men? Because sometimes it seems to have had a... What, do you know what you were getting? What vaccinations are
the only thing I can actually... Well, no, our first 2 weeks we had inoculations. I don't know which ones they were. Then I think we had some more inoculations when we went to Rhyl and the second part of our training. And then because we were going abroad, I think we had the cholera, yellow fever, and was it TABs and... things like that. So
that's quite a lot in one go, and they're quite strong. Mm. What effect did it have on you or the other lads?
With me, it had no effect whatsoever. We did have stiff arms, if I remember rightly, and kind of like I suppose we were just normal for the drill sergeants, and they would have you out in the morning swinging your arms. I mean, although your arms are terribly and things like that, the actual to get the movement back in again, and I suppose after about that 24 hours sort of thing, that kind of stiffness had gone as such. So I had no problems. There were one or two who are a little bit not happy about these needles and things like that, but I can't really remember anyone fainting. No,
now, what were the Woolwich barracks like? Because they're an older type,
yeah.
I believe.
I think the old Woolwich barrack, when the old gunners were there, about 1700s and things like that, and it was divided into two parts, as I remember. And it was an old cold, it was like a cold, damp, it felt, because it was the winter time. One side was what they called the field, people going on the field guns, and the other side was the ack-ack. But the food was much better. But on the side we went, which I think was, I suppose we went the ack-ack side, they had this old square, cobbled square, and on each corner, or the corners, there were these old horse troughs when they used to have the horses and what have you. And the rooms we went in, because we're going back, kind of, I suppose, I go back 1800s or whatever, and it was like two-storey, if I remember rightly. And I think we was on the lower one, and they had these two-tier iron beds, like sometimes you see in the porridge on the prison things, where it was kind of like, I think it was boards across. And then there was up and down. And then they had this old black stove, and we had this issue of coal, because it was cold in that period and things like that. And like I say, I remember on one of the walls there was this sign, and it says accommodation for so many and so many horses, which was, I suppose, when the gunners had horses to pull the guns and that. But the food was improved tremendous when we went to Woolwich, because there was lots of what I call regular soldiers, who were long-term regular soldiers. There used to be some of these soldiers used to have about four of these stripes upside down. I think it was one for every 5 years I'd been in, you know, these old soldiers from yesteryear. But the food was tremendous there, and
why was it so much better?
Well, I think for one reason, I think where we had in the training camps, it was always porridge. It was always this horrible, sloppy porridge. And I think they used to put salt in, if I remember, rather than sugar and things like that. But when you went to Woolwich, you had a little bit of a choice, not a lot. But there were things like cornflakes, which I'd never seen in the army before. And I think for the so-called, what I call the main course, whether it was breakfast or dinner, things like that, I think it was more different foods, better foods, you know, individuals, where it was not sloppy, not so much sloppy as perhaps some of the other things. So I'd got no problems with the food there. And
one of the things is you were allowed out in the evening, I know.
Yeah.
So tell us what you'd do.
Well, because we were actually a transit, and we were... Well, I mean, we didn't know what was happening, but we were then going to give 14 days leave as such. Now, at the other training camps, all we had there was like I think it was about a 48 pass or a 36 or something like that. But to go from Rill to Kettering and chop and change all these things, had to go to Crewe and Birmingham's and places like that. By the time you actually got home, you more or less just had about a short sail and you say yes, no, and things like that, and you was off again. But with Woolwich, you were allowed out, and so that in the evenings, because it was exciting for me to go to London and that, and the only time I'd ever been to London before, that was when I saw my apprentice documents. Indentures, and so they allowed you to go out, and from Woolwich you could actually go over on the Woolwich ferry boat, which was free, what I remember of it, although there was a tunnel underneath, and you could go to what was the place the other side, we used to sometimes go over there, and there used to be these old pubs with all these Londoners in there, all these sing-song. But the other thing as well, because it was exciting, we used to go on the train, I think we used to go as far as Charing Cross, I think. But we used to kind of go to the big cinemas, and they used to have in the interval, because it was unknown to me, an organ used to come up, always a member, and he used to play his organ like at Blackpool, and then they used to sometimes have a little tiny show on the stage. And when we first went there, we thought we'd come to the wrong place, because all these things are on the stage. We thought we'd come to the cinema. And so we was able to go around, but we never had really any money to play with. And so the other big thing as well, because most of the lads at that time, they were all football mad. And, you know, lots of lads all come from Newcastle way, and they're all Newcastle and Jackie, what was his name, Jackie somebody. And anyway, so there was this big football match coming off at just up the road at Charlton, and so a lot of us all decided to go. And of course, there are lots of the big stars there, like Stanley Matthews and Don Welsh, and there were all England players playing for that. And of course, it was quite exciting at that time. And but you will see, was only at Woolwich just that period until.
Now, what about your embarkation leave? Tell me, what did you do that? I presume you went back to Kettering.
The embarkation, I went back to. Came back to Kettering. I know we had to take everything with us. I remember turning up, I'd got two pouches, a small pack, and I got a big pack on my back. And I think I got my sack there as well, on top there, and went in there. And I can't really remember too much about kind of that embarkation leave and that. But
did your parents worry about what you were up to? I mean, well, did they realise?
Well, they knew I was only perhaps. They didn't really know where I was going. You used to write letters home like everyone else did and things like that. And my mother always used to write back to me. I don't think my father ever did. And I think sometimes my brothers and sisters wrote a few bits and pieces. And anyway, so that.
Now, so you set off in January 1951.
Yeah, so it's January, I think, is it January the 10th?
It looks about, yes.
Yeah, I think it's January. The reason I've actually got me dates, because I'd got a little diary. I'd got two little diaries with me. One was the Army Cadet things, and went through 1950, and the next one went to the end of 1951. This is why I can always say what dates I arrived and which dates I didn't. This is where people queried me, and I said, I can say, well, I've got my diary there to prove it. And we was going down to Southampton, so we went by train down to Southampton. This was all gunners. This was completely gunners going down there, and we had all assortments of people. I know two of the fellas that actually come out the what they call the Nick. Whatever they'd been, these were regular soldiers, two old lags. I think they'd either had the choice, either going in the civilian prison, or they went to the Far East and things like that. So they decided they'd go to the Far East. That's one thing I do remember. But anyway, we went down to Southampton, and as perhaps what I always remember, because I was still a little boy at heart, and I'd always been interested in trains and boats and things like that. And we got down there, and there was this beautiful white ship. I always remember, and it had this beautiful white line along there and a single funnel. And I thought it was a cruise ship, which I suppose it was. It was an ex-German cruise ship. And it was on the berth where the proper cruise ship Andes used to berth. Anyway, I honestly thought when I was going there, I used to see these pictures of all the troops on these old ships during the war, you know, these camouflaged ships, and the troops would be on the decks sleeping and things like that. And this is basically what I thought I was going. So we all kind of started going up this gangplank of this ship called the Empire Foy, or Foy, as the lads call it. Most of the troop ships were named after rivers in England, like Windrush, Orwell, Foey and things like that. So we went up this gangplank. Always remember, we entered, and there was all this wood panel in there, and I couldn't believe it, really. And then we went round, and then kind of like all, as the troops went in, there was all depending which unit you was being the gunners, we was allocated, I think it's G deck, somewhere about four flights down and things like that. And like I say, these were standees. They were kind of like these
standees.
It's kind of like a spring type. Well, I suppose a spring type bed which fit, and you get three. That it's sort of like twin bunks. It's like three, and things like that. And so we had standees, and I honestly thought I'd be sleeping on the floor. So we went down there. We got rid of a kit and things like that, and then little by little we were issued. With a disc for the cafeteria.
How did that work?
They had these coloured discs, like red discs, blue discs, and things like that. And so they used to kind of call out from the tannoy system, red disc to the cafeteria now. And of course, you was issued with a big white mug. And down in the cafeteria, they had these section kind of trays, you know, kind of different parts, you know, for the main course beyond this one, and your custard and jelly or whatever you had on the another one, and things like that, and a big white mug of tea and things like that. And it was quite good, the food. And I quite enjoyed it, and so once we'd sorted ourselves out, and of course,
it says you got both colours. Or
yeah, well, I acquired both colours. I mean, I was a typical soldier, wasn't I? I was an army cadet, and so like most people, kind of, I think we set sail about midday, if I remember rightly, and so most people actually went up on the deck, and if we sailed down, I suppose, is it Southampton Sound, and then we go around the corner of the Isle of Wight, and I always remember I saw the needles of the Isle of Wight, and of course this was something special to me at that time, and then of course as we kind of then started sailing out into the more or less what I call the deep sea sort of thing, it became quite windy and a little bit choppy because we're talking about January as such.
Now, did you have any sort of feelings about going off on this adventure?
No. This was an adventure. This was excitement for me.